Mini episode 245 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini-episode number 245. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross coming at you today. We've been doing this all season long, taking a look at the NFL week by week. And it's one of my favorite days on the calendar coming up this weekend, not just on the football calendar, on the entire calendar for the year. Championship Sunday. It is a great, great day. Obviously, Super Bowl Sunday is a thing that all the casuals gravitate towards. But if you're hardcore, Championship Sunday is just about as great. I have my own tradition on this one of getting together with friends and watching the game just like for Super Bowl Sunday. So I truly, truly can't wait. I know this is going to be a great day all across America coming up this Sunday. I'm sure it will be for my cohort here, Kyle Ross. Kyle, good to have you back on, buddy. How you doing?
Ricky, the pleasure is always mine, and looking forward to, we're coming down the home stretch here. You know, the only bad thing about, reaching championship weekend here is that we're down to the last couple of shows here. It seems like it was just yesterday we started doing this. It kind of bittersweet, but I'm looking forward to the games too. Although I will say, kind of the old proverb is that, the divisional round's the best weekend of the year, I suppose. A lot of TV people say that because there's 2 days worth of games, and it will be tough for Sunday to top last weekend, I think. With some real surprises, different things that maybe we weren't looking for last week, but we have our final four, and I'll tell you this, unlike the last two rounds where I was really banging my head against the wall on some of these games, I had my picks for these conference championship games penciled in about the third quarter of New England Houston. I knew exactly what the lines were. I knew exactly who I was taking. I mean, I've been ready to do this show basically since Sunday night, although from a professional standpoint, Ricky, I'm kind of glad we waited a couple days because, was I hot on Sunday. I think it would have been akin to you on election night 08 and some of your behavior, my rants that I was prepared about Atlanta, Seattle.
I think so. And then if anybody checks out the Five with Smalls podcast, good friend Platinum Smalls, I've been known to sit on those things. He did an election night thing, and I ranted for about 45 minutes straight at one point this election. I can understand that. I can understand those thoughts. And bittersweet for me as well, although, again, it's not like, again, you and I can always find stuff to yap about. WrestleMania is coming up. I smell a history of backlash coming somewhere along the way here. I mean, you and I will always find a way. We have plenty of things.
Trust me. I guarantee that next week will not be the last time we converse.
More hipster bashing, I'm sure. When we recorded the Pantheon this past weekend, I went on record as saying at one point when we were talking about music, I said, we were talking about the notion of hit music versus the other stuff, because somebody had nominated Tom Cochran's album as that one is the most underappreciated of all time. All anybody ever listens to is Life is a Highway and all the other stuff on there. I said, it's somewhat akin to the Fabulous Thunderbirds back in the 80s. I said, I've always liked Texas blues and that kind of stuff. I said, I liked all their stuff the best that didn't get played. I said, I don't want to sound like a hipster. I don't want to sound like that guy. All the best stuff's the stuff you've never heard of. Whereupon John Adams pipes up and says, that's exactly what you sound like.
that's absolutely tremendous. That could be something. I'll tell you what, I've been reading some stuff recently that gave me an idea. So who knows? Trust me, you ask me about anything, I've always got an opinion. And believe you me, I still have an opinion on what happens Sunday around 4:30 Eastern time. a
I think we all do.
A time that will live in infamy for yours truly. I texted a few people and said, never in my career, if you can call it that, have I been more upset about the result of a game that I actually won the wager on. I was legitimately upset Seattle didn't win. I mean, really upset. I mean, hot.
Right.
I mean, I was looking like if it was – if I was at the local watering hole, and you know, the biggest guy in there might have said, go Falcons, I might have challenged him right there. It wouldn't have ended well for me. But I mean, that was the kind of mood I was in. And I don't generally root. I mean, you know, as of 3 months ago, I had – literally zero emotional investment in the Seattle Seahawks, and maybe we should have started there, Ricky, just breaking down the two NFC games, and we can do a conference by conference, give our championship game.
I think so. You know, and in looking at that, and looking at the way that it shook out, it's one of these deals where, and again, and the fact that I don't know if you'd call it a backdoor or whatever, that was the only one I hit over the weekend, 1-3 in a ruinous weekend after going 3-1 the previous weekend. Again, the previous weekend, not at all exciting. This weekend, very exciting, albeit with results that were all over the place here. But in that one, again, looking at it, it's really, really, really strange because I've been the guy to stick up for Atlanta all season long and to say that they don't deserve a reputation as chokers. A lot of it has just been where they looked situationally bad. But I'll be the first to say it. That's one of the only games I've ever seen. And I'm like you, and I watch football sort of like how I watch wrestling. I watch it aesthetically. I like good work rate, so to speak, here. You know, so I'm watching it from that perspective, and I don't know that I've ever seen anything here where it looked like in wrestling they would say the better man lost. I mean, Seattle looked like the better team than Atlanta did because clearly in retrospect, you know, you've been banging about time zones all year long. Seattle looked like a team that just couldn't get out of the chute right away. I said if Atlanta wins this game, they win it playing an Atlanta Falcons-type game, and I was basically right because what they were able to do building that lead, they were playing like the Atlanta Falcons they're capable of being. The problem was in the second half they gave it all away. It almost came back to bite them, but it didn't because of Seattle going soft at the wrong time there in the secondary, leaving just enough time left on the clock.
I'm going to give the Falcons credit first because they won the game. And, you know, I think part of me was so irritated because I had so many great jokes saved up for you because it was so Atlanta the way it looked like they were going to lose the game. You know, every negative thing that had been written about the Atlanta Falcons was about ready to come true in just one horrific half for them. And really, I mean, it speaks to Atlanta sports teams in general. I think it's an awful – I have family there. I know you do too, Ricky. It's an awful sports town. It's just an awful sports town. But I'm going to give them credit. They won the game. Look, it was the most points the Seahawks had allowed in any game this season. And I know that sometimes you and there can be other listeners get real frustrated when I say something like this, but I'm just going to bottom line it for you. If those teams play 10 times, or if they play like a series like they do in the other sports, Seattle's winning the series.
Right.
Every time. And furthermore, I would go on the record, as long as two conditions aren't present, that being it's in Atlanta and Seattle down 20-0 at the half, Seattle wins 9 times out of 10 over Atlanta, I feel. I mean, the second half was so lopsided. I've really bought into this Russell Wilson. I know, you know, on our final podcast here, we're going to kind of, in addition to giving our Super Bowl pick, we're going to take a look at whether we're buying or selling some of these teams moving forward and how they measured up against our preseason expectations. Seattle very clearly is going to be a team that a lot of people are high on going into next year, very clearly.
Sure.
And it's funny you made the wrestling analogy because in many ways, wasn't Seattle Steve Austin in that game? Didn't they?
Yeah, they
although
were.
They lost the game, everyone came out thinking they were the better team. And sort
I knew
of like,
it reminded
oh.
me of something, Mania 13.
Yes, and it's kind of like, damn it, Russell Wilson's so great. Man, what a great game. That was so unbelievable. I'm so entertained. And then it's like, oh, and then Atlanta's playing next week again. And
yeah.
I don't mean to be rude to the Falcons, but that's just kind of how I felt. Like, I had these visions of this wonderful, and I know you hate storylines but in the NFL, but, I mean, the whole Seattle-San Francisco dynamic would have been incredible with you have the two Pac-12 coaches with the history. They both made against-the-grain decisions at quarterback. you know, kind of going against all conventional wisdom. It would have been something to really behold. And ultimately, and we'll, I guess, kind of move on to San Francisco here and then, you know, the game itself, against the NFC Championship game itself, I just think that you're going to wind up with a less competitive game when all is said and done. I know it's in Atlanta, but my God, I mean, I don't have a lot to say about the San Francisco game, Ricky. I was on that one. I still did well. I'm doing pretty well in these clubs. 6-2, back-to-back 3-1 weeks. I had San Francisco last week. I'm not patting myself on the back or anything. Maybe I am. Who am I kidding? Yes, I am. But I don't have a lot to say about that win over Green Bay. I thought it was a bad matchup for the Packers. I understood why a lot of people backed the Packers, but they were almost even more of a trendy dog than Seattle was, I thought, by the time that game rolled in. I think they were the only underdog that saw more bets on them than against of the four games. So that was interesting. And, it, I mean, Kaepernick obviously had a game for the ages. And when I was just breaking down the numbers here a little bit ago, there is no reason to believe that he is not going to just run wild against Atlanta. I've heard a few people talking about, oh, Kaepernick, you know, Atlanta seemed to really figure out the mobile quarterback. And I just have to say this to him, what game were you watching last week? Atlanta gives up. Here's the thing, that a stat that I looked at before the Seattle game last week that made me love Seattle even more, plus the points. And I obviously thought I was going to win outright. Atlanta, while they're 21st against the run overall in terms of yardage, they're 29th in terms of yards per carry. Why I think that's significant is they were winning a lot of games this year, and teams had to abandon the run. So they're even worse against the run than I think some people think. And against Cam Newton and then against Wilson last week, I mean, those guys in three games were averaging about 400 total yards, that passing and rushing combined. And Kaepernick, off what he did last week, I just think he's going to run well. Do you realize that Atlanta allowed almost 8 yards per play last week?
That's
horrible. That is awful. And they were not good during the year. They were 29th during the year, allowing, you know, 5.5. They allowed almost 8 yards per play last week, which is awful. And San Francisco, an offense that went for about 600 total yards, oh, by the way, last week. I just think that this is, and I'll go over some of the betting history, because obviously the line is curious. I think historically there's a lot of interesting things to talk about the line. I'm interested to hear what you have to say about Kaepernick and how he matches up with Atlanta first. But I just think this is a disastrous matchup for Atlanta, even more so than last week. The Niners get a bit of an edge with the game starting at 3 o'clock, where Seattle had to do 1 o'clock. And obviously you can tell what I've been saying here for the last 5 minutes, San Francisco's going to roll here, and they're going to go to the Super Bowl.
I think they're going to win and cover also. The line is 4.5. It started at 3, immediately shot up to 4.5, or quickly, I should say. It got up as high as 5 earlier today, Wednesday. It bounced back down to 4.5. A couple things about this, and I agree with pretty much everything you're saying right there. Again, Atlanta, how they come out of this, and immediately after the game, oh, how does it feel to be vindicated? You know, that was the whole post-game rap here. They really didn't deserve that. That's a thing. Again, they got a little luck at the end there. Ryan made some good throws. There were some good completions.
Yes, he did.
But you talk about doing the bare minimum in the second half after what was a great first half, but a first half where, again, Seattle, you know, pretty much coming out sluggish, lethargic, and everything because of the time zone issue. Now, that's very interesting about 3 o'clock versus 1 o'clock. What I'm wondering, Kyle, is to a certain extent, do they even bother? Do they treat it like it's a one-hour time difference? Do they a minimum as far as, you know, changing watches and everything like that? I wonder, because you have the opportunity, as you point out here, to really treat it like it's, you know, just the next time zone over, if you so choose. And I could see Harbaugh doing that.
Yeah, and, you know, he's done some crazy things in the past, obviously, for those early start times. We talked about that, and maybe Seattle should have done something. I don't think the travel really mattered for Seattle. You know, I'm going to approach – there's a couple things, too. I guess going back to that game, there's a million things I wanted to go off about. One of the – with the first half, obviously – Seattle just had some questionable decisions, but obviously they had the two times in the red zone. The first, they went for it on fourth. They didn't have Lynch in the game. That was bad. And then the next time, when they ran out of time, this is an important point that I think needs to be mentioned, by the way. When they ran out of time at the end of the half, I need to take a few people to task. I'm not going to mention anyone by name. But everyone that's criticized Wilson for, quote, taking the sack, go back and do yourself a favor and watch that play. He had no option. The guy just blitzed him right through the middle. He had no shot. If he would have thrown it away, it would have been intentional grounding. He was standing right in the middle of the pocket. He had no chance. I'm telling you, people want to kind of criticize Wilson for that. I'm just saying, he had no option. It was just a well-designed blitz. The guy just had a perfect shot at him, and he took advantage. But with the time zone, I just think it's not a big factor. That kind of helps San Francisco. And I think they're stagnated this way because, you know, just in case that they don't want to put a West Coast team at such a big disadvantage for such a big game. I think that's why they do the late start times. It would have been interesting because the way they do it, Ricky, with the TV is the AFC NFC flip-flop every year. It's not based on the matchups. They don't wait. The NFC was going to be the early game regardless. It would have been really interesting if it was, you know, two West Coast teams kind of there and you would have had a real early, then it would have been interesting because it would have been noon local time in San Francisco. So, but alas, that's not the matchup. I wanted to go over obviously the big thing here since we both agree on the 49ers winning and covering here. The obvious angle, and I was not surprised, I don't know if you were, I doubt it that you were, about the line is that you have a road favorite in the NFC Championship game, or just in the conference championship round. That does not happen often. It's only the sixth time going back to 1984 that we've seen that, and the road favorite has covered four of the previous five instances. The only time they failed to, if you remember this one, was Donovan choking dog McNabb against Arizona about four or five years ago. All the others,
well,
the most
Green,
recent,
Green Bay over Chicago a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, that was the most recent example. That was the most recent example. And, you know, there were a couple others going back to the 90s, Buffalo against Miami. And then you had Denver was actually a wild card one of the 2 years that they won the Super Bowl. And they beat Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
About Cordell Stewart and Pittsburgh at home field advantage. Imagine that. Denver beat them. And then there was a New England over Pittsburgh instance. This would have been like 04, 05. It was Ben Roethlisberger's rookie year where, if you remember, he came in, you know, in what was it, like week two or three, and they won all their games. But New England was, you know, the better team, obviously, and they kind of handled them. So, yeah, so history is on the side of the 49ers here. I don't know anything beyond 83 if there were any instances of the
– okay.
You know, the road team being favored. I can't really imagine there would be in that, you know, usually, you know, you don't see a lot of that. I mean, obviously it hadn't happened at all before 90. So, you know, the first instance I found of it was 91. So, but end of the day, I just think way too much Kaepernick, terrible matchup for Atlanta. And the Niners are going to roll.
Great research by you on the road favorite thing, Kyle.
I do mea culpa here a little bit. You know, it doesn't really affect anything, but you'll laugh at this because it speaks to my pathetic short-term memory. The list that I went off of when I do this research, I never bothered to write in last year's results figuring, well, it's last year, that's easy to remember, right? Well, last week I went over a couple of stats about road favorites in the division round, how there had only been one, Dallas and Detroit. Back in 91. Well, guess what? There was another instance of it last year, New Orleans against San Francisco. They failed to cover. So shame on me.
Right.
I can remember something 20 years ago, but I can't remember something last year. So, and then one other thing, too, and this will kind of make for an eventual transition to the AFC side of things. There was one other instance of a team that won the game straight up but didn't cover that I didn't mention last week.
Okay.
And it was New England Baltimore in the AFC Championship game last year.
Right.
So
absolutely is the case. Yeah.
Yeah. So I
remember
just
that.
Wanted to clarify a few things here. I know how people sometimes can get very nitpicky. So.
Good point. Memory impairment. I can't for the life of me think of anything that could be a cause in that. Maybe if I ruminate on it long enough. But anyways, a couple points I want to make on this before we move on. I agree with everything you said there. The thing about Kaepernick, look, we can put it to bed once and for all on whether or not it was the right move to have given him the job over Alex Smith because, and I thought it was the right move anyways, look at what happened last week. They beat Green Bay at their own game. Aaron Rodgers went out there. They put up 31 points. They were explosive. I picked Green Bay because I expected that offense to go out there and give a good showing for itself. San Francisco went out there and beat them at their own game. That doesn't happen with Alex Smith. I understand he outdueled New Orleans last year. I think that was a once-in-a-lifetime kind of a thing. A couple other things here, Kyle, and just looking at the statistics that just back up everything that you said. If we look at the regular season numbers and the numbers of basically yards per game, the Falcons' pass defense is statistically worse than Green Bay's. So that ain't good for Atlanta.
Oh, boy.
And the 49ers' run defense is statistically better than Seattle's is. Again, that ain't good for Atlanta. So much for the Michael Turner resurgence. It's one of these things where, and I think to put a bow on it, as far as when we're talking about road favorites, I'm going to go back to that Chicago-Green Bay game a couple of years ago. I think New England-Pittsburgh is also a great example of it. Some games you look at it, and this is not 2020 hindsight because this is what we were thinking at the time. You look at it and you go, how the hell is this one team seated higher than the other? Looking at how they're playing, looking at the totality of it, where they are now, whatever. San Francisco is seated higher at the end of the day because of the eyeball test. They look like a higher seed than Atlanta. All the way around, what they did to Green Bay was very, very, very impressive. My pick to win the Super Bowl. And I think, we can talk about this aspect of it, that aspect of it. And if I say so myself, I think we've covered it brilliantly. But at the end of the day, Kyle, it's the eyeball test.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta just looked like, you know, my hat's off them. They won. You know, they did what they had to do. But it's funny. I have family later. They're like, oh, well, how do you like our chances next week against San Francisco? And I was very bitter at the time and looking to hurt feelings. I'm like, you're going to get killed. I'm like, you're going to get killed. And then I never bothered to respond anyway. I was so. And keep in mind, I won with Seattle, too, last year. I've never been more upset over a game where I actually won the bet than that one.
I've really
become a believer in this Russell Wilson, by the way. I mean, you know, that's a different podcast for a different day. But, man, is he good. I mean, he was unbelievable.
He was. And I happen to remember subsequently you mentioning to me weeks ago about being able to get Atlanta at 20-1 to win the Super Bowl right before they won
that. It was Seattle. And what was funny is their odds had plummeted down. Like, I mean, they were you couldn't get them 20-1 to win the Super Bowl anywhere last week. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that was kind of part of it, obviously, that I was looking to do it. I just kind of wanted to be a little smarter than everyone else and pick Seattle, you know.
You came very close.
It would have been really interesting. I don't know if – In hindsight, I don't know if I would pick them to beat San Francisco this week in San Francisco.
That's a tough one.
It would have been tough. I'll tell you what, the line would be. It's interesting that the Niners are a 4.5-point road favorite in this game. They probably would only been around 3.5 at home against Seattle.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. And, I think that's a line that would have gone back and forth probably, but inside the field goal to be sure. So many different interesting aspects to it. You know, and again, we were expecting this all along on the AFC side. You referenced that it's going to be a rematch of last year's AFC championship game. What we were certain all of us were going to see was New England at Denver, yet another Brady Manning postseason matchup here. Who's to say, but maybe we've seen the last of those. We were so sure that we were going to get one this year.
Yeah.
It always takes the Stars being in alignment at this stage of their career. New England is laying 9.5 at home. They're laying 9. They opened at 9.5. It ends up being a rematch from last year, the first such rematch, I believe, the first one in the same facility since the Pittsburgh-Houston tilts back in January of 78 and January of 79. But again,
there was another. I'm surprised. There's been another AFC title game rematch since then.
It wasn't at the same, but the venue flip-flop, but I'm shocked that this is escaping you, unless if you're saving it. I'm not, you know what, it's one of these things where it's in my head, and I looked at everything this week, but it's not in my head at the moment, so.
It's Denver-Cleveland.
That's why I blocked it from my memory. Drive and fumble, thank you very much. Those ones. And the last time there was a conference rematch on either side was actually Dallas and San Francisco in the 90s. They did it 3 years in a row, 92, 93, and 94. When I looked up, I just thought, like, man, you talk about the two best teams in the league by far. What? I mean, man, those were two great teams. Dallas and San Francisco teams.
They were. And as far as if we're going to get a little bit deeper into the weeds of trivia, 93-94 playoffs, that's the last time you had three repeat participants on Championship Sunday because, of course, San Francisco coming back from last year. We have everybody but the Super Bowl champion coming back from last year's Championship Sunday with the Atlanta Falcons filling in for them the last time that happened. Denver and San Francisco on the NFC side, of course, Buffalo coming back on the AFC side. So a lot of history here in this game. And we start with just the shocker on Saturday. I actually missed the first part of the game as I was wrapping up the Marathon Pantheon taping sessions here. And just the fact that Denver was staying with Baltimore was staying with Denver was enough of a shocker. And they never ultimately were able to pull away in that game. My sense here, and I don't think it's 2020 hindsight, because I'm going to go back and look. It's just something we didn't see at the time, which I differentiate from 2020 hindsight. The AFC West, aside from Denver, there were 13 combined victories in there. There's no Super Bowl champion in the last decade that comes from a division even remotely like that. Denver had a glass jaw. I understand that they had a first-place schedule because of last year, and they played some tough games out of division. But trying to come out of the worst division in football by far, you can't do it. You can't, and we should have seen it. Neither you picked them to go to the Super Bowl, which puts us ahead of a lot of people that did. But I'll tell you what, that's a glass jaw if ever I've seen one, because Baltimore kept coming at them, and Denver kept going, hey, wait a minute, these aren't the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, there's little to be said about the New England-Houston game. I think that game just pretty much – I know that it looked for a second that you'd get your backdoor cover on Houston, and I certainly was sweating it. I thought a lot of people were, but ultimately that game went exactly how I thought. New England just much better than Houston. But with Baltimore,
Bill Belichick was concerned with getting the cover for whatever reason, kicking that cheap late field goal.
Yes, he was. Yeah. I saw an old Belichick doing it for the alumni tweet during the game when I was following Twitter.
Yes.
But with the Baltimore-Denver game, and that was the one I got wrong, but if you remember, you asked me at the end of the show last week, who do you give the bigger puncher chance to, Baltimore or Houston? And I said definitely Baltimore. And it's not because I looked upon Baltimore that favorably, it's because – all year, you and I were more down. You and I got fooled because we were more down on Denver than everybody all year.
Yep.
All year. Like, I kind of elevated them late when I was like, well, they are the hottest team and they are the number one seed now and all this and they've got the great record. So, yeah, they've got to be a top four team. I had them fourth going into the playoffs. That's probably lower than a lot of people did. I just didn't look that favorably on Baltimore. And you can talk all day how Denver should have won that game. I mean, that was a horrific gaffe. I could not. When Flacco let the ball loose, and it's funny to watch on TV because you don't really know, you know, what exactly the receiver, where the receiver's at when he launches the ball, but the camera moves kind of quick. And the camera went, I was like, oh, my God, the receiver's open. And then it happened. And I just looked over at my buddy that I'm watching him up. I'm like, are you kidding? Did that just happen? I mean, it was all-time gaffed by Denver.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, you know, Denver had two returns in that game. Baltimore had non-offensive TD, too. The only thing that really, really shocked me is just how high-scoring that game was. But it's interesting. If you rewind to last year at this time, I picked Baltimore plus the points. This is actually what reminded me that I missed this one last week as far as, you know, dogs that covered but didn't win the game outright. Of which Baltimore's in that group last year.
You know, some say they probably should have beaten New England outright that day. If you remember, drop touchdown pass, missed kick by Cundiff. I don't think Baltimore is going to win this game by any means, but this just seems like too many points, Ricky, and I'm grabbing the number with Baltimore here. It just seems like maybe they've, I don't know if it's a Lewis thing, I don't know what. It seems like they got enough of Lady Luck on their shoulders, and these games are always close between New England and Baltimore. Baltimore got them in the regular season. They beat them by one. I didn't think a field goal was that controversial. I thought it was clearly good. I didn't know what everyone else was talking about. But I just think this is too many points for a game like this. Even at home, even as good as New England looks, even as much many points as they put on the board, even as much as Baltimore typically stinks on the road, even as much as I didn't like Baltimore all regular season long, I just think it's too many points. I mean, we learned it last week. I mean, New England's going to win this game, but they will not cover it.
Well, and it's interesting because, again, you and I pretty much avoid as much as possible revealing where the other one is coming from ahead of time so as to deal with this with spontaneity. We both think that that works best. As it happens, I'm agreeing with you again. I think Baltimore is going to cover. My only concern in this, I don't think they're going to win the game, although, again, New England vulnerable through the air. So there is that. I mean, and this could be a real shootout. Flacco's been on a tear lately, albeit the one thing about that 52.6 completion percentage in the playoffs. He's going to have to do better than that against New England. But the only thing that concerns me is, should this be regarded as at least a borderline why line? When you look at Baltimore and all of this, you know, Team of Destiny, Hokum, and all of this kind of stuff, for the line to be this big, I understand New England just has incredible respect out there. They're at home. I understand all of that. But based on Baltimore having gone in and knocked off one of the two perceived gargantuans in the AFC, the fact that it's a 9-point line, I wonder if they're not trying to tell us something. Are you and I disregarding some kind of message out there by grabbing the points?
You know, I wasn't stunned by the line. I knew it would be greater than a touchdown and less than 10. I knew it would be in that kind of what I called lines maker dead zone last week. But the line does make sense. I mean, when you look at last week, New England was favored by about the same against Houston, and Houston killed Baltimore during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, odds makers typically aren't going to put a ton of stock in just one win and drop this line by a field goal just because they beat Denver. And some say, you know, maybe they put a little bit into it because, I mean, word is that Denver was going to be favored by, I think, 2.5 against New England in a potential AFC Championship matchup I'd read. So, you know, maybe Baltimore's getting a little bit more respect. Maybe Baltimore's, I'm trying to think here. At the end of the day, I'm not surprised about the line. I'm just not surprised. I tried to do math in my head right there and failed miserably. I wasn't terribly surprised by this line. I just, you know, we talk about the Super Bowl loser's curse. When was the last time the loser got back to us? It was Buffalo, right? Didn't we break that down on one show?
Yeah, I think so.
Not since Buffalo has a Super Bowl loser gotten back the next year. You don't see that often. So, you know, there's some kind of funky stuff, I guess, working against New England. But at the end of the day, Baltimore's been on field for so long in these two games, and New England runs that up-tempo style. I just think the Ravens run out of gas, and New England wins this by, like, a touchdown.
Yeah, that's my sense of it also.
I was going to jump the shark, so to speak, there, and just talk about, you know, you and I are agreeing that it's going to be San Francisco and New England in the Super Bowl, and that the line is 2.5. Who do you take there?
2.5?
Yeah, New England would be favored by 2.5.
New England would be? That's very interesting. My first thought is New England. I know that they've been to two Super Bowls and lost, including last year, since their last one in 04. But what's very interesting, USA Today Sports Weekly points out this week that this is the most rushing yards they've had for a back since Corey Dillon's 1635 in 2004. Stephen Ribley, 1263 this year. A very vital part of that up-tempo offense that you're talking about as they've implemented part of Chip Kelly's offense from Oregon. So, yeah, again, with everything that New England can do, and that's the thing, too. New England and San Francisco both have some vulnerabilities here and there, and I understand that San Francisco took it to them at least right off the bat when they did play on Sunday night a couple of weeks back. But my early inclination would be New England, although I'm going to reserve the right once I start breaking it down in depth to change my mind if that's what the combination be. But my early sense would be New England.
My early lean would be San Francisco, so that could make for an interesting podcast.
Okay.
I think right now, if you go back to my power rankings coming to the playoffs, I had Seattle 1. They're out now, obviously. Still think they're number 1. San Francisco number 2, and New England 3. And then I had Atlanta down at number 6. So I actually rate San Francisco as better than New England. So if I can get points with that, I'd take them. At least that's my initial inclination, unless if – you know, we've got 2 games ago and 2 weeks after that, so a lot can happen between now and then. But I think right off the bat, when I saw that line, I would back the Niners with the points.
In terms of the positioning of this, what's very interesting on both sides is that Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, 2 quarterbacks with an awful lot to prove going into the Super Bowl. That'll be part of the spotlight if it happens. Having said that, on the other side, if it's Colin Kaepernick and Tom Brady, what's very, very interesting about that is there are going to be so many comparisons made between both quarterbacks getting the jobs the way that they did and making the Super Bowl in their first year since then. Tom Brady's going to be asked, does this remind you at all of how you got the job back in the day? And Colin Kaepernick is going to be asked by a bunch of a-hole reporters, does this mean you're the next Tom Brady? So there's going to be all these points of comparison that are going to be very, very interesting.
Well, does it mean that I will also be found watching the game at the end of a bar with Alex Smith and Drew Bledsoe? Is my question to you. Because that's what I want to know. I know Drew has a wine company going or something like that, I think I heard during the week. My hat's off to Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah. glad he's succeeding at that level, if not as a Super Bowl quarterback. But, there are a lot of different aspects. And then another thing, too, and this is where – I like to get into just these kind of odd areas of this. We never saw until 2 years ago, Green Bay-Pittsburgh, a matchup of teams of the decade afterwards. Like, I know that, like, Dallas and Pittsburgh had played a few times, but not when Dallas had been established as the team of the 90s, so to speak. That was the first after-the-fact battle of teams of the decade. And you're looking at the team of the aughts here, New England, facing the team of the 80s. San Francisco.
Yeah.
You're looking at that possibly for the second time in 3 years. A little bit of history rearing its head. 2 teams in the decade.
And that was
poised to square off if we're right about this.
Yeah, and the 49ers were Brady's favorite team growing up, right?
I believe so. So you're going to have that aspect of it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, Harbaugh, Belichick, I mean, by the way, good luck getting those two to give away anything before the game. That I'll enjoy that personally.
Oh, there's that.
Just making just giving short answers to reporters the whole time and what just
very, very curt.
Yes.
Who could be more curt between the two of them? No question about it.
Yeah.
Both teams having won Super Bowls in the Mercedes-Benz New Orleans Superdome, so you're going to have that aspect of it. The history's coming into play here, so all kinds of different interesting aspects. If that's what it ends up being. For the NFL championship 2 weeks from Sunday. But, you and I, shading it the same way here. San Francisco to win and obviously cover, as we said in the one game, New England to win but not cover in the AFC championship. And, should be very, very interesting, especially the second game Sunday. It could be a big aerial battle, really kind of airing it out. Again, the first one here could be a styles clash. Could be Jerry Waller, Roddy Piper, King of the Ring 94. It could get kind of ugly based on that. We're gonna have to see, Kyle, how the styles mesh in this one here. Can we get the work rate that gives us a good entertainment quality? Can we get at least a 3-star matchup here in the NFC Championship game? I don't know if we can.
I believe it will be a dud. I believe that, I believe we will be left to a second half of pointless Joe Buck and Troy Aikman banter while we wait for New England Baltimore. I don't see that game being close at all. I see San Francisco delivering an early knockout. I see this being, and we've seen these in the past, just these preposterously lopsided conference championship games, I really feel this one is not going to be good for the home team at all. I know, you know, at home they have a tremendous history of success, the Falcons do, but I just think this is going to go very, very poorly for them.
I have a feeling that will be the case as well. So we're going to see how it all shakes out here. San Francisco and New England are picks to win, although, again, like we said, Baltimore to cover. So a Harbaugh daily double on the cover for Sunday. Anyways, for folks looking to get down on that. And ultimately, yeah, we'll be coming back subsequently right before the Super Bowl. And as you said, shaking out not only our Super Bowl picks, we'll look at the picks there. We'll look at the prop bets.
We'll
take an early look on the buy or sell for next year. We'll be doing all of that subsequently here after we get a chance to get a little breather after Championship Sunday. So looking forward to that one, Kyle.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And, you know, hey, I would be remiss. I couldn't mention it last week. We were a little short on time. Hockey's back, Ricky. Tell me what's going to happen this year. I know you've got to be ecstatic about that hockey's back. Educate me a little bit. Who should I be paying attention to this year?
Yeah, hockey is back, and again, unfortunately, it came back at a time when my Detroit Red Wings are going to be probably a 7 seed, here. So hard times, Dusty Rhodes, hard times have come to the Detroit Red Wings post Nicholas Lidstrom. I tell you, you know, the New York Rangers are going to be back in the thick of it. The LA Kings going to be making a run at a repeat here. We almost had that dream matchup last year in the finals with the two big goalies, Lundqvist and Quick. Could very well be the case this year. We'll look for a couple squads. I think Tampa Bay is going to be right back in the mix after being down for a year. Philadelphia tried to gear up a lot in the offseason. Vancouver's going to be right there making noise. So, yeah, a lot of the usual suspects in there. Chicago,
Find
a way to elbow their way in.
And you know, you're so biased. How could you not mention the team that I'm pulling for, the style and grace of the Pittsburgh Penguins? Hopefully they win the Stanley Cup.
Hate the Penguins. Realistically, I waited two weeks to get that joke in.
The way hockey should be
played. Better than anybody, Kyle.
Yeah.
The way hockey should be played,
the Penguins way, the Olympic way, a stylish way, full of grace, none of this fighting and thuggery. Give me the Penguins.
Hoping and praying it won't be the Penguins, but it very well could be. And, you know, if somebody doesn't rise up for the good of hockey to take them out. But, yeah, they're going to be in there. They're going to be in the mix. A lot of interesting different angles. Brian Burke just fired as GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs right before the start of the season here. So interesting storylines galore, a truncated season. I think it's going to be a lot of excitement. And as I say, not a good year for my Wings. Selfishly, I wouldn't have minded if we would have just taken the year off for the Wings and maybe given Ken Holland a mulligan for the pathetic last off season. But we'll have to see how everything shakes out here. It will be very interesting, very fun, and the playoffs should be better than ever under this system.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, it came at a good time, too, you know, when football's going away. So just a little something else. I knew you'd be more excited than me. I just wanted to troll you about the Penguins. So
you did so successfully, as always, and as successfully as your plays have been. 6-2. ATS in the postseason, my man. I'm looking to keep up the roll this weekend. And since my picks are basically piggybacking yours, I have extra reason to hope yours go well.
Yeah, I know. I gotta get this year-to-date record. We got to get that for the Super Bowl. This is like my best NFL year ever. It's been a real pleasure, Ricky.
It has been. It has been. And completely on the record, folks can go back and check it week after week after week. Kyle Ross doing it without a net. I dare anybody else in the industry to put all their picks out there without a net, but just killing it all year long. Great job, buddy. Thanks for another great show today, and we'll kill it for the Super Bowl also.
Looking forward to it, Ricky.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.